Stephen Brunt joins us. Tell us about the last 6 hours, Stephen.
Well, it's not often that the cameras go on at 5. Yeah, that's it's a different feeling. It's been like the last 12 hours have been pretty weird because I was way up on the north shore of Quebec until sometime yesterday, last night, got back here at about, well, midnight, something like that, and I believe I was talking on television at 5. So it's been an interesting trek, but hey, at least the story paid off. It's a great story, big deal, and much rejoicing in the soccer community.
Yeah, there has been. I'm almost surprised at the level of it because the bid looked so overwhelmingly, you know, strong compared to what was panned as just a meh bid from Morocco that had major flaws. There wasn't any other way this was going to end, was there? Or was that just the way that FIFA's voting? You never know.
Yeah, remember, these are the people who brought you Qatar and Russia the last time around. You know, both of those bids were super, super dirty. And, of course, they've gone through a fair bit since then. Sepp Blatter is no longer around, and there was a reform movement and all of that stuff. And they've, you know, espoused transparency. But, look, until they actually do it, it's funny, all of us sitting there, I think, watching this thing, logically, there's nowhere else they could have gone. The bids weren't even close. The Morocco bids was ludicrous. You know, they're going to build all of those stadiums from scratch in a tiny little country. It made no sense. And obviously North America, that says the World Cup hasn't been there since 94. There's all kinds of money. There's TV, there's sponsor stuff. There's, you know, all kinds of things that made sense. But still, you know, the history of FIFA is such that I think all of us were still just a little bit surprised when it was announced that the United bid had won and that the margin was, it was a bit of a landslide. Just like being skeptical of FIFA is like being skeptical of the IOC. It generally pays to be surprised when they're honest. I think that's probably the right posture.
What do we know about what that bid will look like? There's a lot of cities whose names are out there. I think there's only going to be 16 host cities, I've read somewhere. Is there ability for cities not on that list to get to host status, or is it just what we see now? That's what they're going to work with.
What you see is what you get. The Americans will pare their list down, but the Canadian cities will be Edmonton, Toronto, and Montreal. That's it. And 10 games in Canada, that may number might change slightly, but that's what we expect. It's funny, they haven't actually confirmed that all three teams will get automatic berths as host, but that is widely assumed. So if that happens, the way in this new structure with the 48-team tournament, Canada could, Canada would be guaranteed two matches, and because they're going to be three-team groups, the top two teams go through. So if they get out of their group, then they would have more, but if not, they would only be guaranteed two. So 10 games spread among those three cities. And, the Edmonton obviously has hosted these kind of games before, international events before the stadium works for soccer. Toronto's got BMO Field that hosted the Women's World Cup and, works for a lot of stuff. The weird one, to my mind, is the Big O in Montreal. That stadium's going to be 50 years old in 2026. And, it feels like it's 100 years old now.
Yeah.
It's fallen down. And it's not properly wired for modern broadcasting or Wi-Fi or any of that stuff. They're going to have to find a way to put natural grass in there. And, there's been a pretty active debate about whether, the only reason it hasn't been torn down is because it's going to cost so much to tear it down. So I have no idea what they're going to do there. That's the one where you go, that seems a touch political. Making sure you have games there. But, part of what happens, Vancouver opted out.
Yeah, I was just going to say, that's equally surprising that pour, what, $500 million or $1 billion into BC Place to bring that up to speed in the last, decade or so. And it's a phenomenal soccer facility that's drawn very well for all kinds of friendlies and great soccer following there for decades, clearly, before there was MLS. That they're not involved is incredibly curious.
Yeah, it is. It's a straight bottom line political decision there about, because there are going to be, and again, it's sort of like an Olympic bid. I think there are costs that are going to accrue to the host city, but you can't actually define them at this point. It's a bit of a blank check. So, again, from a practical point of view, yeah, that's something you would have to think about if you were running a city. But you know, Vancouver probably makes the most sense of anywhere in Canada to host that for all the reasons you just stated. So for them to not be part of it is, it's going to feel very weird.
As for the future of the sport, I imagine the assumption that Canada will get in, not to mention the popularity of the event being in the region, this has to be just an absolute boon for the developmental aspect of the sport here.
Yeah, it will be. It all the cliches apply, you know, watershed, all that stuff. Like, if you look back at the 94 World Cup in the United States, which was the first one I covered, and, you know, it had very much had the feel of kind of, you know, a foreign game in the United States. And there was still that lingering sense of failure around soccer in the United States, going back to the, you know, North American Soccer League when they had Canale and Pele and Beckenbauer and all these guys played in the States. You know, and there was a kind of brief moment when it flourished, and then it died. And that there was, you know, there's most people still believe that soccer would never work, that it just you could not sell it to Americans. And after 94, you got MLS, which, you know, had kind of a stuttering start, but is, you know, now very, very healthy. You had the American men's national team becoming a bit of a force. They're not in this World Cup coming up, or the one that starts tomorrow, but you know, they have made noise on the international level. There's, you know, American men's national team games in the United States sell, you know, they sell out big stadiums. Soccer is very much part of the conversation in the U.S. now, and that all started in 94 when they hosted. So, look, soccer is already a big deal in our country, and especially among, you know, the generation somewhat younger than me. They've grown up with full access to the game, that in a way that I didn't. You know, I didn't grow up watching Premiership games or Champions League or, you know, European Cup in those days. You know, you barely saw it, and you know, it's just as easy now. You can follow Manchester United just as easily as you can follow the Calgary Flames. So that there is a, you know, there's an incredible degree of soccer interest and literacy that did not exist when Canada was in it the only time in 1986. And I, you know, and again, I think this thing's just going to catch a wave. You know, you've got the Canadian Premier League's coming on online next year, which from a development point of view is going to be pretty significant. And some good, you know, there's some talent in the pipeline, but there, you know, now you've got a carrot. Now you can say, you know, remember the Owen Hargreaves of the world who opted to play for other countries because they wanted a shot at being in a World Cup. And I don't blame them, to be honest. I don't blame him one bit for what he did. But now if you're a Canadian and you're, you know, if you're a 15-year-old Canadian whiz kid, you wouldn't have to do what Owen Hargreaves did, which is, you know, go over and play in Germany, then play in England and play for England and internationally. You've got a shot here.
What's the next step now? Like, we joke about it being 2,900 days away, but that is going to go by quicker than I think we all think. The stadiums, mm-hmm. aside from maybe Montreal, seem to be relatively in place. What's the next step here to get ready for this thing?
Well, I think, you know, you're going to see, you know, in terms of the sport, I think we're going to see the Canadian men's national team under John Herdman, you know, who just took over. There's going to be a lot more focus and attention on that team because it's going to be building towards something. I think when they play a friendly, people are going to take notice. They're going to take notice of some of the good young Canadian players like Jonathan Osorio and MLS and say, you know, there's a guy who could be the captain in 2026. Then there's going to be, again, a lot of logistical stuff in those three cities. I think there's going to be, again, we're going to find out what the hell they're going to do with the Olympic Stadium, how they're going to bring it up to speed. But I think, you know, it's like an Olympics. You know, if you know you've got an Olympics coming in your country or your city, I think you watch the current Olympics, you know, in a different way. And I, you know, so World Cup starts this week in Russia. It, you know, otherwise it's kind of, you know, it seems kind of like a distant thing. But now, you know, we're part of the line of succession. It's, you know, 4 years from now, it's going to be in Qatar, which is going to be a really weird one. But, you know, by the time we get there, people are going to be talking about the North American World Cup to come. So, you know, it's a big party. It's the biggest sporting event in the world. But, you know, it's way bigger than an Olympics. And, you know, I just think it's going to, the notion is going to start to kind of settle in with people that for the first time we're invited. Well, the second time let's put it this way, for the second time we're invited, you know, as a country to participate, but yeah, for the first time as a host.
And imagine if we even get it on merit as well. That'd be pretty cool, wouldn't it?
It would be like, you know, well, I don't think we'll have to. But, you know, I'll tell you, what'll be interesting, qualifying for 2022, which is the next one coming up, obviously, you know, Canada, if Canada indeed has an automatic bid, it means that the qualifying cycle after that is kind of, you know, beside the point. You don't have to.
Sure.
But it would be interesting. I think people will watch that 2022 qualifying, especially some of the younger players on that team, and see, you know, maybe it has a different ending than we've seen for the last 30 years. You know, maybe when we start talking about whether they make it to the hex or whether we can beat out the Costa Ricas or Panamas or Honduras's of the world. You know, I just think it'll be a more hopeful and less defeatist kind of vibe around that team, just because of what's coming.
Yeah, and if they're going to make us play in 35C at 100% humidity, let's bring them to Edmonton in January, Stephen. Use your advantages.
Well, you know, Canada, the only time we qualified, the decisive match in the qualifying for 1986 was played on a very, very cold day in St. John's, Newfoundland.
Perfect.
So I'm all for it. Let's make them shiver.
That's a feel-good story in our nation this morning. The exact opposite side of the spectrum is the entire Ottawa Senators. I don't know how much you've seen or heard, given that you had, 5 hours of sleep and have been on the soccer beat since being in northern Quebec, but this organization continues to find a new place to call rock bottom.
Well, we were thinking about it. When the season ended, we thought the worst problem was that, you know, Gene Melnyk would say something stupid again. You know, he seems to be the least of their problems right now. The word that kind of comes to mind is toxic. You know, it has been, you know, from the incident at the combine to this last thing is too bizarre for me to even process. I'm not even sure where you start on that one. But you know, how do you assemble a team with those two guys on it next year? You know, how can you have a dressing room with, and you know, and presumably this has been an ongoing thing, right? It didn't just happen. It actually was happening while both guys were playing. This one is just kind of beyond comprehension. I don't have anything to offer on it except that, my God, you almost feel like you have to clear the decks there.
Yeah,
start afresh, right?
And clear the decks without a first rounder next year that could be an incredibly high pick if you clear the decks.
No, it's and you've got an owner who, you know, seems ambivalent about. Well, not ambivalent about this, skeptical of the marketplace and is kind of saying the wrong things. You've got an arena situation which is kind of held out as the salvation, but there's a lot of issues there about whether that'll happen. Anytime you've got a fan base that distrusts the owner, and I think that's not an overstatement. I don't think people in Ottawa trust Gene Melnyk. It's a bit of an act of faith to support a team. You have to feel like the owner is, you're on side with the owner, that you have the same goal. And the minute you break that bond, you know, whether it's you get cynical about the owner or you think he's going to, you know, all he wants to do is cash in or pull up stakes and move somewhere else. The minute you break that bond, and it's weird because it's just an entertainment business. You know, you don't feel like that when you go to the movies, that, you know, you have to have a relationship with the people who own the movie theater. But with sports, you do. And the minute you break that kind of emotional bond, man, it is really hard to get it back. And I think maybe it's impossible if it's the same guy.
And that's just his relationship with the fans. I mean, you could start to look at this organization and say there are major cultural issues if the things that we've seen unfold in the last year are happening, and that they really, you know, they haven't suspended their AGM, who has a court date in July in Buffalo. You know, I understand innocent until proven guilty, but you can also suspend someone and wait for the outcome, like Major League Baseball is doing with Roberto Osuna.
Mm-hmm. Which would seem prudent, right? Buy yourself some time. Allow the process to continue, allow the system to work, but just give yourself a little bit of distance and a little bit of breathing room. And I have no idea why you wouldn't do that. You know, again, it speaks to a kind of dysfunction. The Ottawa Senators feel dysfunctional on about 10 different levels right now. And again, if you were a fan of that team, what are you thinking right now?
Well, I'm not spending any money there. That's what I'm thinking. Screw these guys.
That's right. Yeah. Like, are you going to send in your deposit for your season
ticket?
No. That's what I mean. It's like a breach of trust. And again, it sounds kind of, as I say, it's a straightforward transaction, you know, money for entertainment, going to the movies, going to a restaurant. We don't think of it that way, but sports is different. You know, you have to feel a little bit like you own a piece of the team. And, you know, and if you're embarrassed by the team or it is very, very hard to get that back. And I would think, it's going to be a long summer in Ottawa.
Yeah, I recall a famous comedian, he'd written a few books and had noted that if people were walking around with corporate logos on clothing like they do with sports logos, you'd be thrown in like an asylum. So there's a different bond with these businesses that happen to be franchises with the city's name on them, right?
100%, right? And that's what keeps the, you know, that's what keeps the wheel spinning. That's what keeps you and I in jobs. So I'm okay with it. I'm glad people keep coming back and watching, you know, watching a game after their team loses or has a bad season because they have an emotional bond. Otherwise, this whole thing would fall apart. But boy, you know, you can wreck that from a, you know, from an ownership point of view. You can absolutely wreck it. And I think Gene, God love him, I think he's gone a long way towards wrecking it in Ottawa.
Okay, we'll switch topics. A couple quick ones for you. Your Ticats, our Stampeders, mm-hmm. Saturday. The most famous backup in the CFL might play his first game in the CFL.
Probably only if the first string guy gets hurt.
Okay.
But possibly, yeah, you might see him, or they might have a package of, you know, plays that they're specific to him. You know, he doesn't. What I saw a little in the preseason, you know, it's still a work in progress. I think athletically, you know, he's got everything you need, and I think he will be the starter there eventually. But yeah, I think he's still feeling his way a little bit. So I would assume Mazzoli's going to play the whole, you know, even if it's a blowout, I'm not sure they would pull Mazzoli. I think they want him in there. I think he's got a, you know, he earned the job last year. You know, I think the job is there to be lost. And I don't, you know, I think if they, a quick trigger would kind of destabilize things. You know, I think that I'm not sure that would be the right move right now. So I would think Mazzoli's going to play, you know, every down. And whether it's going to be a competitive football game or not, it's funny. Hamilton obviously was dreadful in the first half last year, was pretty good in the second half. I think there was a lot of optimism going to this season, but it's funny. It still doesn't. I think they may be good again by the end of this season or halfway through this season, but right now there's still a lot of moving pieces there. You know, they don't feel like a settled team the way, you know, the Stampeders do, the way the Argonauts do, the way the Eskimos do. You know, like I think Hamilton's really interesting, but I'm not totally sure where this winds up. You know, look, one thing they've got going for them, I think, is Montreal's going to be god awful in the East. They may not, you know, they may well only win a couple of games. I think Ottawa's taken some steps. You know, they've continued to take steps back from that Grey Cup team. So, you know, it's probably just them and the Argos really in the East, I think. So that doesn't hurt.
Have you pulled out your handy dandy season ticket holder pocket calendar, because Peter Klein, who's working with us today, has, and he'll unveil the first month for you. Go ahead, Peter.
Okay, go ahead.
So obviously on the road here in Calgary, week one, week two at Edmonton.
Yeah, not good.
Week three, home to Winnipeg. Week four at Saskatchewan, and then a bye in week five, and then home to Saskatchewan week six.
So it's a week six Manziel's job, right?
Yeah, probably could be. Yeah, no, it's not. Yeah, no, like that. No, that's brutal, isn't it? Like, you literally, you know, of course, teams. You know, the only thing they don't have is the BC road trip, which always kills teams too. But yeah, that is a brutal start. So I guess they better be good in the second half. Well, you know, look, if they come out of that with, you know, their heads held high and a win or two, you know, looking ahead to the rest of the season, they, you know, that might be enough.
If it's 500 at the bye, you can plan the parade route. All right.
Yes. Okay. Thank you. I will. I will. I know exactly where it'll go.
All right. We will chat again on Tuesday. We'll have the actual 2018 World Cup to talk about at that point.
Yes.
Are you around? Is there fishing between now and then? Are you camped out at early hours at pubs to watch the 2018 version from Russia?
Well,
what are you doing?
No, I've been camped out at home mostly to watch it. There will be fishing, but I'll try and fish after the matches. I will kind of commit. I'm not sure if it's going to be a great World Cup. I sometimes World Cups are not all they're cracked up to be, you know, in terms of the actual tournament. The stuff around it is fun, but boy, there's some crappy teams in World Cups. It's not. It's look, the Champions League stuff like that's way better. Europeans are way better. But, you know, you do kind of lock in the way you do to an Olympics if you like the sport, and, you know, you just flip on the, you know, somebody's playing, right? Oh boy, Saudi Arabia's playing Russia. There is that aspect to it, and I'm one of those people.
Bold prediction, who wins it?
Well, the really boring predictions, you know, would be, you know, if you pick either Germany or Brazil, you're going to be right, you know, three quarters of the time. my emotional pick, you know, would be France, because it's 20 years on since France 98. I covered that tournament. It was pretty great being there when they won. They've got the talent. They play a fun brand of soccer. You know, and they'll either be great or they'll implode. You know, I would think it'll be one of those two things. But like, you know, will they win? Probably not. You know, probably Germany will win. Just pick Germany. I tell you again, you're never wrong if you pick Germany in the World Cup. You're almost never wrong.
Enjoy the weekend. Enjoy the games, and we'll chat Tuesday.
All right. See you.
Steven Brunt.